Welcome, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it is the 29th of September 2011, and I am honored to be talking once again to the old friend of the Corbett Report, Greg Nicoletos of WakeUp.tv, better known as WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. And it's been an awfully long time since we've had Greg on. Of course, he used to be a regular guest, and I hope he will be once again. But Greg, it's an honor to have you back on the program. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Much appreciated, James. Yeah, just for the listeners out there, I took a break. In a nutshell, I guess what people should also realize is the work that James undertakes, it is stressful work. And I guess for me, you know, after doing it for quite some time, it was just time to, you know, take a check on my life at the end of the day and, you know, just find out what's important. Not to say that the movement wasn't important, but also, you know, where your state of mind is. So, yes, I feel recovered. I'm back, but I'm also going to choose my interviews wisely. So, yeah, thanks for having me back on, James.
No problem at all. And I'm honored that you would choose me as one of the outlets that you'd go to, because certainly it does mean a lot to have you here. And I know that a lot of the listeners get a lot out of our conversations because you are a wealth of knowledge on this topic. So it is good to have you back, although I certainly do understand why you'd need to take some time off.
I'll call you the voice of reason out there. And I touched briefly on it. It's at the end of the day, it's people like you, James, that will actually break the template of what of how we actually take this message to the masses, because you obviously have your major voices in the conspiracy factualist world, or theorists that you want to call it. But ultimately, for us to actually break the template of what we're trying to achieve, it really has to come from a very logical mindset, and basically focusing on facts without, you know, hype and emotion. So yeah, much appreciated. Thanks for having me on.
Well, as I say, it's great to have you here, and it has been several months now. So I guess just to bring people up to date with WakeUp.tv and all of the news and information that's continuing to coming out from that incredible resource that I hope people are checking out on a regular basis, perhaps we can start by getting into some of the new videos that you've got there.
Yeah, well, look, what we do is we do cartoons, and then we obviously do full feature films. Now, we have released the new film, which is Predictive Programming and the Human Microchipping Agenda. And this is a big shout out to Wes and to Matt and to Justin as well, because the movement itself over its period has basically had, you know, between, I don't know, 10 to 15 people help us on it. And they come from, you know, from different walks of life. They come from, you know, different continents. It's a global movement. And it's just, I just choose the people that we work with very carefully, simply because our movement doesn't want to be, you know, whether you call it infiltrated or the like. It's a very controlled group, and we like to keep it that way. So just a big shout out to Matt, Wes, and Justin. You know who you are. Thanks for putting the video together with us.
Absolutely, and it is quite a video. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it and the information therein?
Yeah, well, look, it's a very broad and well-researched document, which was actually written initially by Matt, which we then decided to put into a movie. And what it covers is basically the beginning of what the New World Order is, how it's actually starting to be mentioned more in society. It then basically covers, you know, predictive programming, which is the subtle, not the subtle, it's basically the engineering, I guess, if you like, of society, utilizing, conditioning programs, whether it be through video, through TV, through media and the like, to basically get you to embrace an idea that you normally wouldn't embrace. So we give great examples of that, obviously, with Hollywood and the like. It's just very well documented. I'd recommend people to actually watch it. So it covers the broad aspect of everything on that side.
Yes, absolutely. As would I can vouch for that. Certainly, I've seen the documentary. It is extremely well researched, and there are so many examples that you provide there of instances in which the media memes are being added in. So it's great. I think a great resource for people. But
what we do is we cover we basically give the, you know, the end user a background of VeriChip. We cover, you know, the alliance between IBM. We showcase the military industrial complex alliance. We showcase, you know, where VeriChip is taking the product into market. We showcase how, you know, RFID is basically being implemented into society. And then ultimately, we say to the people, you know, this is where it's headed. If you can't actually see the writing on the wall, it's ultimately up to you. But the reason, you know, we've chosen this vehicle, I guess, and to utilize more Hollywood footage in a sense, we're then also utilizing, you know, the same tool that they are using against us, which is the sense of familiarity. So when someone has actually seen a movie before, and then we can actually showcase the movie, which has actually showcased, you know, microchipping in it. Like Wes actually said, who was, you know, the editor is, you know, he did so much work on the movie, it's ridiculous. A lot of the stuff, you just goes over the top of your head. It filters into your subconscious, but until you actually see it, you just go, you realize that, you know, you are being programmed by these craftsmen who truly understand the human psyche. So people need to also understand that no movie at the end of the day that is coming out from Hollywood or from a think tank, sometimes these movies aren't there to make a profit. They're basically there to mold and to shape our minds. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, large corporations with huge seed funding from, you know, from not only the IT but also the military industrial complex and the like, and a portion of, you know, of their propaganda is, you know, is through the media and through movies. And, you know, when one goes into a movie, it wants to be entertained. So obviously the, you know, the critical thinking component of the brain truly switches off as we, you know, just sit back and become zombies. And that's not to say, look, that I don't go watch movies, but I do. But at the same time, it's, you know, you have to know what you're seeing and just pick up on what's happening, you know?
That's so true, and I like the way that you broke that down, because what you're really doing in this movie is kind of reverse engineering the social engineering that they're programming us with through this media.
Yeah, exactly. It's we're showing them what they are doing to them by utilizing their techniques, I guess. So it just breeds a sense of familiarity. So when we actually showcase movies that, you know, that they have used, people immediately embrace it and say, okay, well, I understand the Minority Report, you know, I understand, you know, all these other movies that have actually showcased microchipping from James Bond and the like. So then we're not actually telling the story to the end user. Hollywood is telling the story. So therefore, you can't actually demonize, you know, we're the people not be chipped or, you know, our movement, or we basically have then become storytellers. And I think that's what's actually made this movie go quite viral, which is excellent.
Well, that's right. And I think one of the things that makes it so powerful, as you say, is just the number of examples and the way they're all clumped together so you get to see it. Because if you show this to someone in one or two movies, they might just think, oh, it's just a coincidence or you're reading too much into it. But if you show them it in show after show after show, movie after movie after movie, it does start to add up to something more.
Exactly. And look, and this is where Matt, our movie genius, he's watched more movies than I think than anyone in this whole world. I mean, he's picked up stuff that I just go, wow, you know. So, total many thanks to Matt. I mean, the movie was just, yeah, far beyond the scope of one person to put together. It was, yeah, simply brilliant. So it's called Predictive Programming, the Human Microchipping Agenda. We tried to actually get it onto YouTube, but obviously because of the fact that you've got the 10 to 15 minute, you know, maximum durations in relation to the videos, we noticed on our other videos as well, you know, one mainframe to rule them all. As you go from series one through to, you know, series five or, you know, in the series, the view drop, James, you know, so it just also showcases the short attention spans that people have these days. So, Vimeo is probably one of the only sites right now that actually lets you have full movie durations, unless you actually have an editor's channel on YouTube, which we don't have.
Right, exactly. We have talked about that before. We've talked about that, I think, way back in the days when it was still 10-minute uploads to YouTube, and we were talking about how that basically makes people into these short attention span kind of beings that can't follow a full documentary. But the interesting part is now that they have the long uploads on YouTube, of course, they only dole them out to certain channels, and of course the Corbett Report doesn't get it, and of course Novarichip doesn't get it.
Yeah, and that's funny. And look, I've actually tried to buy a channel. You know, I've actually put it out on Facebook. You know, is anyone willing to, you know, sell their director's channel? Because, you know, ultimately, like I said, it is about shortening attention spans. And, you know, if you can obviously, what is funny, I mean, you've got Google, you know, who's, you know, a powerhouse in relation to data, you know, the amount of data that's flying around the world. And then, you know, when they basically, the reasoning why they actually shortened the YouTube videos. So think about this, okay? YouTube, hang on, let me just stop that. Anyway, think about this. YouTube was started from a garage by two guys who were basically, you know, conducting all the world's videos, full bandwidth, right, in a garage and providing full video services to the whole world, okay? Which is always the garage story. So, you know, Google started from a garage. YouTube started from a garage. You know, Facebook started from a dorm. So it's just
Apple started from a garage.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, what sort of a garage are we talking about? But anyway, so Google acquires YouTube, right, at a, you know, was 2.7 billion. I can't remember off my head. And then in their costs, what the reason they gave for actually reducing the video lengths was cost cutting, that the bandwidth was actually costing them too much. So, I mean, it's just absolute bullshit. There's just no other word to use. And, but you know, Google's not going to tell you the truth, obviously. But yeah, that's my spin on it, is just to reduce attention spans. And then obviously if you have a movie that's 1.5 hours and you have to click through 15 different points to actually watch the movie, well, the percentage chance of you actually getting through it, obviously, you know, diminishes with every video clip.
Well, there's definitely no doubt that that it changes the scope of what can be done when you have that kind of long upload. And I'm lucky enough, honored enough to be working with Global Research TV that has the video account that has the long uploads on YouTube. So I've started doing the feature interviews. So I have a weekly interview that's anywhere from half an hour to an hour long, and it's up there in one complete totality on YouTube. So
yeah,
you
should be very grateful about that. And look, the one good thing, I guess, which, you know, that's what created the cartoons that we actually do, was just a case of, you know, how do we address the short attention span, and, you know, and the younger generation who's on Facebook, who has his attention span splintered from, you know, they're sitting on the computer, they get a comment here, an SMS there, the phone's there, you know. So it's a case of, you know, if we can package information in 2 to 3 minute funny blocks, you know, that's just another angle to market, you know. So, you know, so some video clips are successful when we go in too deep, especially with our last carbon Satan video, which you actually helped us tremendously on in getting the actual factual data. With, you know, Hockey Stick Man, I'd recommend people to watch it. It's called Satan's Minions, and it's on our YouTube channel. That has not gone viral simply because it's just too deep. It's too deep. The carbon jokes are too deep. But
it is too deep. But it, I mean, it really is so well done. I genuinely laughed extremely hard at this because I guess I understand sort of the inside baseball and some of the jokes and things. So for me, it's absolutely uproarious. But
yeah, that's the point. I think it's a bit of an inside joke, sort of a cartoon where it's gone over a lot of people's heads. But it's still something I'm very proud of. And you know, and thanks to Bob out there, who is the guy behind, and this is also just a shout out to Bob Keska, who's the guy who did Metallica, Napster Bad, Money Good, Napster Bad. So when peer-to-peer networking basically started, when Metallica actually sued Napster, he did this fantastic video, and I just thought, we need to work with this guy, and that's who we work with on the cartoons.
Well, he does an excellent job. I mean, it's so well done, and I really do hope more people will watch it. So I'll put in a link in this interview, in the notes for this interview, to Satan's Minions and Global Warming. And we should throw a shout out to your YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Noverichip.
Noverichip, correct, yeah. That's the one, James.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I definitely hope people will check that out, because, again, I think not only that, but also all of the other videos you've done, just extremely good videos. And unfortunately, yeah, some of them don't go viral, but they're still, I think, useful. And at any rate, yeah, they make me laugh. So,
yeah, well, look, what we're trying to do is, this is a global agenda. And the point is to form a bedrock and to have a foundation. So when you know, if we do get to the point where we do reach a point where there is the possibility of a microchip populace, you know, which is a real agenda. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But when we do get there, the goal of our movement is to have established such a portfolio and such a resume against this agenda that if someone Googles anything related to it, we basically have, you know, many of the links out there which we currently do. So it's just a case of just, you know, due diligence on our side, you know, chipping away. And ultimately, you know, you can't control people. It's ultimately up to them. All we can do is give them the information, and I can rest, you know, go to bed at night going, you know, I did everything I can, but ultimately I can't, you know. That's what free will is all about, is you make
exactly
your own
choice. Right. Well, you've led the horse to the water, so you did your duty.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's exactly what we're here to do. So so once again, just incredible information coming out of there. And of course, also, of course, on wakeup.tv, you have the news feeds with all sorts of news coming out about the latest in technology.
Yeah, we've been a bit slack. We've been probably more active on Facebook, and that's just with the break that I took and everything like that. So what I have noticed, which is quite interesting, you know, and even this is on major sites, including, you know, Prison Planet and InfoWars and the like, I have actually noticed that there's a major drop in traffic, even when we get videos put up on, you know, taken on by InfoWars or Prison Planet or, you know, I guess probably the one that generated the most traffic was actually Vigilant Citizen for us. So he's got some tremendous punch out there, the guy that actually focuses on you know, the hidden meanings and the occultic side to, you know, to Hollywood and the like. But what I have noticed is there is a big switch from traditional websites, where people are now starting to actually get most of their news from Facebook, which is obviously now the number one site in the world. So go Zuckerberg. It's amazing what you can do from a dorm.
And extremely scary, given all of the things that Facebook is involved in, including their latest admission that, oh yeah, we've got those little cookies that track you even after you log out of Facebook and can send information
exactly
back to us. Yeah.
And look, and get this, okay, get this. I've got an iPad, and you know, I've worked for Apple, and for the life of me, I can't. When you're actually utilizing, when you're using Facebook on the iPad, regardless of when you switch location services off, your position is still basically tracked. So when I do posts on it, so I've gone through it. I've gone through location services. I've switched off, you know, the Facebook location services. I've gone through cellular data. I've gone through the settings. I might be missing something, but I mean, you know, for Greg Nicoletis, who's worked for Apple, to be missing something, the fact is that it'll get to a point where, you know, the app that you're using will be part of the OS, where your location-based services will automatically be switched on. So that's what we're seeing in the future. It's a case of it won't be really an option, because it will be tied into an app that you're so conditioned to using. And that will obviously, you know, be whether it's, you know, near field communications in relation to conducting commerce on your mobile phone, which if you don't have that on, well, obviously, you know, we can't verify your location, which means we can't verify that the person who's using the phone is making the actual digital payment. So services as we have them today will basically cease to exist. That's the obvious game plan.
Right. Well, it's not only just the apps that they're introducing that we take on board without really considering the consequences of, but it's also, I think, built into the architecture of the systems themselves. As you say, with the iPad, no matter what you do, you can't turn off all of the locational services. And there have been entire textbooks written about forensics of the iPhone and how, you know, there are all sorts of different things that the police can get into and play around with if they have an iPhone involved in a criminal case. So, I mean, exactly. I think it's
Well, look, every time you mention that, every time you press the home button, it basically takes a photo of you. And you know, Apple has had the FBI subpoena, basically, you know, the information on or the photos that have actually, you know, been utilized in cases which have actually led to prosecutions and people ending up in jail. So, your phone is, is obviously speaking against you. You know, it does not remain silent, if you like.
Right, and yet when you hear about that in the news, it's generally presented in a great way. Like, oh well, look, it helps it helps them solve crimes. It helps the police.
Yeah, it's always generally a pedophile. You know, it's as long as we use the pedophile, I mean, you're pretty safe in introducing any legislation.
Exactly. Which, right.
Just put Protect the Children Act, and then It doesn't matter if you vote against Protect the Children Act, regardless of what the actual bill says. But yeah, that's what I mean. These people are masters of semantics, you know. So we need to understand that. And you know, look at the media blackouts that are occurring right now with, you know, with what's happening with Occupy Wall Street and the like. Yeah, it's not making the news. So you know, it's sad, but that's the reality, you know.
It's sad, but actually, I mean, really, ultimately, I think we have to start detaching ourselves from the idea that it even matters what they're covering in the news anymore, as we start to see more and more stories coming out, as Media Monarchy has covered recently, that the majority, or the I believe, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but there's a poll that has found that more people receive their news from the internet as their sole or main source of news than at any other time previously, and less people receive it from TV than at any other time measured. So we're definitely winning.
That's really good. That's really good news. Look, for me, I always watch, and it infuriates my other half because I watch, you know, Fox News, you know, especially Bill O'Reilly. He's funnier than the Comedy Channel, realistically. It's just, it is unbelievable. But
let's do it live.
Welcome to the no spin zone. You know, I just think, man, it's just, and this is the number one channel. Like, what would the founding fathers be thinking? It's, oh my God. But although, you know, you do have Judge Neapolitano, I think it is, who is a voice of reason on the Fox channel.
Neapolitano, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he's a great guy. So, you know, just amongst the rotten apples, there's, you know, there is always a good seed at the end of the day.
Agreed. I think there is still some people in the... I certainly don't think everybody who's involved in the media is evil and looking to do evil. I think there's a lot of people who genuinely want to tell the truth, but I think just in key places, in key parts of the chain, in this case, the editors or the publishers or people in that chain can exert so much power over it. And it's very much the same, I think, technologically. Just a few key programmers who are designing, hardwiring the architecture of these systems can put something deep in the kernel of the system that most people won't even know about, including Apple programmers and employees like yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And and that's the point. It's you bring up a very valid point. I mean, you've got the people at Apple, and look, I work for Apple. It was, you know, a fantastic organization to work with, and you know, you truly believe you are changing the world, and they are. I mean, from an actual OS perspective, I have a 1-year-old who actually can press the home button, flick the tag, open the iPhone, and then start pressing the buttons, because it's so, I mean, think of the genius of Apple that a 12-month-old can actually figure out the OS. So it's not that the 12-month-old has figured out the OS, it's that Apple has figured out the human, and that is what's scary.
That is scary, isn't it? And yet, again, it is brilliant, it is genius, and it is amazing that they've been able to do that.
That's the thing, it is genius. So, and, you know, the point is, when you bring this up and, you know, you go with location-based services, and a lot of people go, you know, well, what's the problem with that? You know, why do you have a problem with location-based services? You know, you already have a compass, you already have a GPS, you already have this. See, it's not about that. It's a point of where are we heading with this? You know, once they monetize this and they start basically selling off your, you know, where your data, you know, where your location is, and then they start basically building a database of who the person is, what their likes and dislikes are. You then obviously are going to have, you know, the major one, I guess, where we're moving to, you know, which is quite interesting, which is the fight for, you know, the digital purse, if you like, or the you know, digital currency, which will be the fight between Google Wallet and PayPal. So people need to watch that very carefully. Now, for me, where Apple actually lost some major ground, which actually, you know, I was actually quite happy about it, Google Wallet actually did sign up with Visa. So Apple was wooing Visa, but Google ended up, you know, wooing Visa, signing the agreement with them. So Google will become a major player in the near-field communications, i.e., you know, payments via your mobile phone. So if Apple, for example, was to have closed the deal with the prevalence of the iPhones, I saw that more of a problem of adoption into the marketplace rather than the Android. So in Australia, the Android doesn't have, you know, the penetration that Apple has. I mean, Apple's just really everywhere. If Apple had basically achieved the, you know, the Visa reliance, you would have seen, obviously, you know, near-field communications or digital transactions occurring a lot, you know, at a higher uptake. So for me, I'm always one of those where when they go, oh, you know, the internet's too slow. Oh, I like it slow because the slower it is, the less bandwidth there is to use, the less bandwidth there is to use, the less, you know, transactions can be made over. So I don't like seeing 3.5G, 4G and 5G actually being announced. Those things actually do scare me because when you do get to the point where, you know, you can have that much bandwidth coming down the line, that's obviously where you can move to a full digital currency where, you know, from your driver's license, your health cards, you know, ticketing, you know, your hotels, wherever you go to can also will be conducted through a digital system. And the only bottleneck that we have right now is obviously, you know, the internet. So, so for me, yeah, I'm very happy with 3G. I don't care.
Very valid points, and I there are so many points that I'd like to jump off from there, but let's switch this conversation around. Let's take it from the other direction, and let's start playing devil's advocate a little bit, because I know that the majority of the people...
Are you the devil, or am I the devil?
Well, we can both be a bit of a devil.
Okay.
well, I know the majority of the people listening to this conversation right now are in agreement with us and do understand how these technologies and the way that they're being implemented specifically are so ominous, and what really we are giving up when we start using geolocational services and the like. But I think there's another aspect to this, and that's the way that this technology is always presented, invariably presented in the media is as something good, as something that's equated to scientific progress, to breakthroughs in medical technologies and things like that. And I think there's a sense in which we often are talking to people about these issues in our everyday life, and we find that many people will buy into that mentality, and they will basically argue with us that, well, I mean, there are so many great things that this technology can do. Why would you be against it? And it is hard sometimes to formulate the right response to that. So I'm wondering, what is your response to that type of mentality that this technology can be used to liberate?
Yeah, my response is how people need to view it is you need to see the services that have been presented to you by the tech giants, i.e. Google, you know, Apple, and the like. So they're obviously offering some very good services to people. They, you know, they're helping people basically, you know, with Google Maps, getting from point to point. Some of the apps are absolutely fantastic. You know, if you're a 20-year-old and want to find the next bar with, you know, beers in it, there's apps for everything. So, you know, that is one side. I think the one that basically brings a lot of a penny for thought, I guess, is you then need to look at the military-industrial complex. So that is always the sobering side to it. So when you have, you know, biometrics by Apple and then you have biometrics by the military-industrial complex, you can actually see that there is a big distinct difference. You know, when the tech giants are basically presenting biometrics, it's to protect your, you know, I guess let's use Google Wallet as an example, right? So Google Wallet will be able to store, you know, your driver's license, your healthcare card, you know, what, hotel cards, your trick, you know, your transit ticket, etc. So Google is hoping that you basically eliminate cash and you're using their wallet to conduct commerce. Now, that's fine, and that's, you know, you can say that that offers a benefit and the like. But then when you actually go to the military industrial complex, who basically says what we want to do is we want to have a high enough accuracy rate where we can, through aircraft drones, basically have 90% success rate in picking up people's biometrics using drones. And if we're at war, that the artificial intelligence programs can actually kill these people and we're happy to sacrifice a 5% of the populace because we're at war, well, that for me is the tipping point, you know. So it's a case of we can't look at it from one perspective of what is benefiting us. We have to look at it from a global perspective of where does the military industrial complex want to take this. And the military industrial complex at the end of the day really wants to take it to a full watch list database. So what they want to have, and people will be seeing us, is your CCTV cameras are now starting to merge with your smart ID or your radio frequency ID. And CCTV is now starting to become soft biometrics, i.e. they can actually start pinning who you are in the city, which is now actually happening in Brisbane, for example. I mean, there was a two-page spread in the major paper showcasing how the new digital driver's license was going to allow the government to actually be able to track you through the CCTV cameras. Now, the company behind this, of course, is IBM. I mean, that's no surprise to anyone. I mean, they've got a finger in every pie. And how else can you build a smarter planet by not knowing where everyone is? So, to play devil's advocate, I think, you know, it's like anything. It's there is benefits to it. The question is the benefits. When do those benefits then get handed over to the military industrial complex, who never has our best interest at heart? So, you know, if you said to me, do you trust Apple over Raytheon or over, you know, Honeywell? I'd say, yeah, absolutely. Are they working together? Absolutely. That's the thing.
Right, exactly. And I think that's something that's difficult for people to get their head around, because they'll tend to probably dismiss that using the types of phrases that they've been given by the media to dismiss anyone that questions something like that as, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. You can't believe that people actually collude to do things like that, can you? And yet, of course...
You can give them quotes like, you know, the US Air Force actually went on record. It was only about 2 months ago where they said their goal is to basically gather biometrics covertly from a distance. And when they spoke at the last biometric conference, they're basically stating that they're now getting to a point where, you know, the distance at which they can actually capture biometrics is just growing, you know, the distance is becoming so large that the goal of having drones actually pick biometrics is just around the corner. So, you know, here you have Pakistan, you know, with the drone killers out there. I mean, imagine you gave them the capacity, you know, to have that combined face and iris recognition system working. But the thing that concerns me is that the military industrial complex is very happy with a 90% or 95% success rate. And this is their figures, right? So out of 100 people, if we kill 10 people that are innocent, well, that's not too bad. We killed 90 people that might have been guilty, but, you know, we're at war.
Yeah, exactly. So they even get to define what guilty means in that context, which, of course,
and
I might not agree.
And they also get to define their accuracy rate. So, I mean, that's the point. It's these figures are all fudged. I mean, who validates their accuracy rates? You know, have they killed people that they actually know that it's 90%? You know, as in, I don't know,
Very good point. I guess, yeah, I suppose that would be referring to tests that they've run or whatever, but
realistically, if you're talking about a drone and then you've got a person that's supposedly on a watch list, how would you actually set up that that experiment, if you like? So would you have someone, you know, it's, I don't know, I look at it from a perspective of how would you actually showcase that in the field, in the real world, in a war situation. I mean, that obviously can be able to show that in the lab, right, you know, or under controlled conditions, but in full warfare, You know, these figures are basically, you know, they're just plucked out of the sky to make you feel good. And you'll always find this, there seem to be between 90 to 95%. It's never 80, it's never 70, it's always 90 to 95.
Agreed. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, like a lot of the things related to this, these technological developments, I think they are plucked out of the air. And I think a lot of it is quackery that they try to pass off on us. And the question is whether we're going to believe it, that there are these, you know, monitoring cameras can really detect terrorist intentions and things like that. I mean, once they start to get us to believe in that technology, they can just operate it, and it could be literally just a shell. It could be nothing behind it whatsoever. And we would just believe it. Oh, it said that man was a terrorist. Let him take him away.
And you know what's funny? I just traveled to the States. It was just 2 weeks ago. And what was they were actually setting up a voluntary. This was a voluntary, you know, walking through a naked scanner, basically. So before you actually went through the line, there was, you know, there was two gentlemen there that basically handed you a form that stated, this is a voluntary opt-in experiment. You can choose to actually walk through the naked scanner, or you can choose not to, right? I obviously said, there's no way I'm walking through it. And they said, yeah, that's fine. But I did sit back and I actually watched. There was probably, I'd say, between 8 to 10 keepers of information that were actually documenting who was going through the I guess, you know, the resistance rates, the adoption rates. I sat back and, you know, lingered around, and in a voluntary case where people did not have to opt in, there was no one who was actually not going through the naked scan. And I'm thinking, here we have the you've been given a document that you can actually opt out, and you're choosing to. So I was actually mortified at the end of the day. I went up to the guy and I said, you know, who's actually, you know, I actually asked to take a picture of him. And he said, no, you can't take a picture of me. And I said, well, you know, you're taking a picture of us. And I showed the CCTV and he said, oh, you can speak to my area manager. And I said, yeah, more than happy to. The area manager came out and I said, who's actually behind the study? And they gave me the name. I haven't actually followed up on who's behind the study. But that would have been commissioned out by a military industrial complex, you know, to a university or whatever it is. That will obviously then pass on the data to the government that says, you know, Australians that happen to go through the airports, you know, on an opt-in, they basically are choosing to opt-in and have got no problem with the naked scanners. And then obviously we'll start seeing the rollout of that. So I don't know. I was just bitterly disappointed. So I mean, that's just the case of where we're at, and you know, the populace does determine how quickly these agendas are implemented. And all I can do as an individual is do what I can do. That's all I can do.
Indeed, but I think in doing that we can set an example for others. I think we get into herd mentalities, especially in situations like airports where we're all lined up and going through and being processed. And I think if people are see the people ahead of them just going through and getting wanded and just accepting it, they're more likely to do the same themselves. But if they see people standing up and making a point about it, they might actually, for the first time in their life, actually have to think about what's happening and why it's happening and whether they can actually resist for themselves.
Exactly. Well, what concerns me as well is, you know, the lines that you're now seeing at LAX and the like, and, you know, you see the frustration of people's on people. If, you know, if you had a, you know, and this is what will be happening in the future, there will be a slick marketing campaign, which, you know, very similar to, you know, what Google is doing with their Google Wallet, as mentioned, they're actually giving people free digital money to embrace it. Say you do, you know, have an RFID tag or, you know, not embedded, you know, at this point, and you can obviously bypass the lines, which you now have, you know, with certain passports, you know, which in Australia is something, it's obviously called something differently to what it's called in America, where, you know, you're biometrically verified and then you can obviously accelerate through the line. So that's what they will prey on. They will prey on the fact that, you know, lines are moving slow, people are tired, and there has to be a better way. So it doesn't take much to see the angles that they will be using, and it'll just basically prey on what, you know, on people's on lack of patience and just being exhausted basically after flights, you know.
That's it, exactly. I mean, it's the point at which we're most vulnerable and most really, I guess, pliant in some way, because we will just comply because we just want to get it over with. And I've certainly been there myself, having done a lot of long haul flights across the Pacific. And by the end of a few flights, you just want to get it over with and do whatever you have to do. So I do understand that. And I think that is part of the psychology of why a lot of this is rolled out in airports first. And it does really make you think about the way that this is done. And unfortunately, of course, now in the United States, we're starting to see the TSA being implemented in bus stations, bus terminals, and train stations, at different places. And there's talk of, roving TSA agents on the street, Viper teams and all of this. So,
because I'm Greek, I'm what's called soft profiled, which generally I will always get picked because I have a bit of a beard, or so I'm generally always picked when I go through, and I will always I say, look, I know my rights, and you're called an opt out, right? You get to stand behind a plastic Perspex, and if you do it long enough, it's actually quite fun. So it's, I guess what I'm saying to the populace out there, while you have your rights, flex your rights, get used to saying no, because you can say no. So, know the legislation, and ultimately, it feels good. It feels good to say no.
Absolutely. 100% right. Because I think that's exactly the psychology that we need to be in, because there's the counter psychology that people will argue, well, if you've got nothing to hide, why don't you just do it? Or things like along those lines. But that's exactly opposite to the point. The point is, if they don't have a reason to, or if they're not even technically allowed to do something, why would I give them that right? Why would I say, oh, okay, you can do that, even though you're not actually legally allowed to? I mean,
exactly. And look, and you can actually put them in a very compromised position, where I had one guy come out and I said, I can make this quite easy for you. I'm quite happy to take my pants off. And he said, look, it's not necessary, sir. So the point is, you can actually, you can enjoy the situation, because the legislation is still there for you. The Constitution still stands. It's whether they can trick you to think that it doesn't. So it's the old case of, knowledge is power, and, I quite like it.
Absolutely. Well, we do have to really get into that mindset where we understand that this is not only, it's not just something that we do, it's something that we are. It's reclaiming our humanity in some ways, and we have to relish that. We have to enjoy being humans, otherwise, all is lost. But I think we've lost the thread. I want to be devil's advocate here. I want to continue to argue against.
Okay, devil, put on the horns.
Okay, here we go. So how about the wonderful idea of microchipping medicine, and all of the incredible medical breakthroughs that kind of technology could provide for people who are genuinely ill and who will genuinely benefit from that kind of technology?
Well, I believe, that there will be a case of, there will be tremendous benefits that will be implemented. And you can't deny that, Western medicine has, especially from the skillful surgeon and the technology that we have, obviously, they don't address Eastern medicine. If you merge the two together, you could actually have a very healthy populace. At the end of the day, if the FDA, the controlling powers in relation to Western medicine, allowed natural remedies and worked with the pharmaceutical, and not with the pharmaceutical industry, but more with the tech pharma industry, you'd have an extremely healthy populace. So, look, even some of the developments from VeriChip, where you've got, biosensor alerts, you've got avian flu and insulin detection in relation to glucose. From the perspective of, if you're one of those subjects, you could say, this is actually offering a service. How I basically like to look is you start looking at where the futurists are taking it, and that's where, not playing devil's advocate, going to the other side, the human being is basically seen as a stepping stone. So, when you have, people from, IBM and the like, basically, or stating, that what they want to do is crack the algorithm for the human brain, that obviously you start thinking to yourself, well, I don't know whether, how will that actually be achieved? But more than that, that is part of the health agenda as well. So you have, it's just like anything. You've got the one sector that is providing a service to you, and then you have another sector that seems to be perverting, what the other sector is doing for you. but it's always the sector that is providing the benefit that seems to be getting most of the media spin.
Interesting. You know, it really strikes me that ultimately all of this, all of the things that we've been talking about and all of these different issues really swirl around the central core issue of what is the essence of our humanity? What are we? Are we really just biological robots that can be re-engineered in various ways? Or is there something more to our essence that is really at stake here?
That is a very deep question. And look, okay. Yeah, well, that is a very deep question because this is my belief. This is Greg's belief. I believe these people that that are running this, you know, this strong AI, human plus, you know, let's pass the batons onto the cyborg movements. I truly believe they have no belief that there is, you know, whether you call it a creator or any belief in the essence that man is, that has a spiritual or something that separates us, I guess to say. And when you have, you know, Ray Kurzweil, for example, who's, you know, the head of the singularity movement, who states that their goal is to seed the universe with intelligence because they consider the universe right now to just have dumb data in it. I mean, I don't know. I just shake my head. I mean, if you go outside and have a look and you look at a tree and how, you know, how the world functions, I don't see it being dumb at all. There's a high level of intelligence behind it. So, you know, for them to actually go, well, we're going to seed the universe with our intelligence and replace this, you know, this dumb code that they call, I don't know. I think they're madmen, to be honest with you. I actually think they're madmen. And then when you start digging in a bit deeper with Ray Kurzweil, what motivates him ultimately is the fear of death. He's a guy who's extremely petrified of dying. He wants to continue to live. And a lot of his projections are based around, you know, his lifespan. So he's begging, you know, that the cyborg revolution occurs so he can obviously, you know, whether he gets frozen cryogenically and continues to then, you know, I don't know, like as in once, this is where the whole thing just makes no sense. So think about this. These guys are working towards strong artificial intelligence. And what strong artificial intelligence is when a machine basically achieves awareness or self-awareness and says, you know, I am now self-aware. So similarly, you know, people would have seen Terminator 2 with Skynet where the machine achieves consciousness. Now, we can't even define consciousness as human beings. So how could we define consciousness in silicon? So there's a question that camp can't answer. And then if a machine does achieve consciousness, well, why would it then want to keep Ray Kurzweil in the mix? So, you know, a lot of the stuff is very fanciful. So Ray Kurzweil wants to hand the baton over to the cyborgs, hoping that the cyborgs will have enough love to keep Ray doing what? I don't know, cleaning the silicon? I don't know. there is more holes in it than Swiss cheese, James.
There really is, and I think you're right to bring up the motivations of these people and their ultimate mindset, because I think what you gesture towards there is just the ultimate, unbelievable arrogance of these people and the idea that they're going to see the universe with their intelligence because they're more capable of it than what we see around us. All of this incredible, vast complexity of the universe, which we haven't even begun to explore.
You look at the cosmos and you look at all the stars, you know, you look at all the stars and you go, yep, that's dumb matter. So, I mean, what would be intelligent matter? I mean, and this is the point of where, you know, it is a new religion. This is what people need to do. I mean, there's many religions out there, but this is the new religion. This is the religion that embraces technology. And I go back to, you know, my 12-month-old son at the end of the day. His second word was hello, which he picks up the phone and says hello, right? So I've actually got photos of him. I'll just, you know, go, this is children of the Borg. I can actually see this next generation has already been molded into a Borg-like culture. It's just there, James. So, you know, it might not be our generation, but you know, seeing it through the next generation's eyes. I mean, I grew up in a world where there was no internet. The next generation will be at 5G wireless, where you'll be able to, you know, download gigabytes within seconds. So, you know, what does that bring to the table?
I was thinking about that the other day. In fact, I was just thinking about how not only did I not have the internet, but I didn't even have an email account till I went into university. And to think of someone growing up today having email probably from the time they're, I don't know,
six. Yeah, so you'd be on bulletin boards and the like I was, yeah.
I wasn't even into that, really. I just wasn't into computers very much. So I didn't actually have very much experience in it
but
at all.
But get this, and I know it's you know, and the older people that are listening would truly understand it. I mean, look, I have 5,000 friends on my Facebook, right? But I have, you know, I can count my friends on my true friends on my one hand at the end of the day, right? You know, when I was young, people would just turn up to a house and the communication or the relationship you had with your friend was far more intimate than, you know, sending someone a message on Facebook, because Facebook and SMSing and all that, what it does do, it fragments how true communication between humans is meant to be, which is a person, you know, giving energy to another human being. So, you know, that is really done in person. It's whether it's over the phone. I mean, it's not to say I'm not saying that this technology is evil in any way, shape, or form, but it certainly has fragmented how society communicates. Absolutely.
Well, you have just opened up an entire topic that we could spend hours talking about, or I could at any rate. Certainly a fascinating topic.
We can do it next.
Maybe we'll do that next time. Yeah, I think it's been almost an hour now, so perhaps we can wind this conversation up. Again, there are so many different aspects to this that I don't think we'll ever exactly plumb the depths in any one conversation, but we've certainly talked about a lot tonight. So are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave people with or direct them to any particular websites or anything before we go?
Yeah, I guess my final thought as in, when I reached a point of burnout, what I did learn in that moment, and, you know, I'd committed a lot to the site, a lot to work, a lot to family and the like, what we have to realize is ultimately, you know, you still control your day. I mean, these powers that be that can try influence you, but ultimately, you know, your self-esteem must not be tied to bad news for the day. Be aware that the bad news is there. I'm saying don't put your head in the sand, but also don't get yourself so wrapped up in all the bad news that you can't actually function as a human being and actually contribute, whether it be to your family, whether it can be to your spouse, or whether it can be to, you know, to your friends. So what I am seeing out there, you know, on Facebook and the like, is, you know, conspiracy, you know, I'll call it conspiracy factualists at the end of the day, that just seem to take it so seriously that everything has to be negative. And, you know, if it's not negative, well, you're not taking your job seriously enough. So I guess my point is to enjoy your day, because tomorrow might be worse. And, you know, just revel in the fact that we still have got some, you know, some very good laws protecting us. It's not to say that there's, you know, not bad things coming down the corner. But, you know, today's not a bad day. Today's not a bad day. That's I guess, what I'd like to leave with.
Well, a very nice point to end on, and I'd like to echo that sentiment, because, again, people can get too wrapped up in just dwelling on the negative and not celebrating what we have, which is really the reason I think you and I and everyone else who's into this is doing this, because we want to protect what we have and to celebrate it. Right. Okay. Well, excellent. Well, another incredible interview. Just always great conversations. So once again, let me just say I'm extremely glad to have you back, and I'm certainly looking forward to talking to you.
As I said, I'm limiting my interviews, but I'm always grateful to be on your show, James.
Excellent.
Much appreciated, mate.
All right. Well, until next time, take care, and looking forward to talking again.
Thank you, mate. See ya.